like a good place given the mission of the Office of Equity, and our hope is will help to lend their expertise, but that individual work directly for the council.
Right. The salaries are all estimates at this point. In many cases, the exact classification has yet to be determined, including for some positions, whether it will be a sworn or a non-sworn position. So that's how we get to the 5.4. For this year, our estimate is right around $2 million, and that's assuming that hiring would begin January 1. That includes most all of the one-time costs and then a prorated share of ongoing salaries.
So just to maybe slice it, go back and ask you in a couple of different ways so people understand. Of the 32 FTE, how many would be sworn versus non-sworn?
So for Police Bureau, we're at 23.
Total,
we're at 29.
Non-sworn?
Total city staff.
I'm asking sworn, non-sworn.
I think my impression is that we're at about 9 sworn. And then within the Police Bureau, we would have 14 non-sworn. I think there's still probably differences of opinion around the specifics of those numbers.
But the biggest single group to be hired would be the 10 folks in the Professional Standards Division to be able to speed up and meet the 180-day deadline for the turnaround. And
so that doubles investigators in that division. Two of those would be sworn detectives. Three would be non-sworn investigators.
Okay. And the addictions and behavioral unit, that's the a lieutenant and 5 civilians.
That's my impression.
All right. Then, unless there are comments on the budget?
Right. No.
Questions
on
the budget?
Not on the budget.
Okay. Then let's get to, again, push everyone's perseverance. The last thing is just how long are we under this agreement, Mr. Attorney, and how is success determined? Who decides whether we're successful or not? Could you move the mic closer to you?
Sure, Jim Van Dyke, City Attorney. Substantial compliance with this agreement is required by late 2017. The city may require, may request early termination if we feel like we've met all the targets before then. There is a dispute provision in the agreement. Obviously, the federal DOJ, we will be reporting many different aspects of the city's performance to them. If they do not believe that we are meeting our goals, they have the opportunity to notify us of that, and we can have discussions with them. We have a mediation process built into the agreement if we can't resolve that dispute informally. The new community outreach person, the COCL, also will be reporting to the Department of Justice about implementation and outreach and that sort of thing. There are a number of different people in here who will be providing reports that will be forwarded back to them. So
the compliance officer and community liaison that you referenced, they will be making the official report after consultation with the community board and others. They will be making the official report back to DOJ on a quarterly basis, and DOJ will decide whether or not we're meeting the...
That's correct. And most of the reports, I believe, if not all of the reports that are referenced in this agreement are public records and publicly available. I know that some portions of the agreement expressly call that out and others do not, but I believe it's the intent for all the agreements, all the reports in that to become publicly available.
Great. All right. Thank you both very much. We'll now turn...
I did want to ask Jim a question.
And then we'll go to public.
Typically, the council considers ordinances and attachments that are part of the ordinance by reference and listen to testimony and then may or may not make changes. In this case, this has been a negotiated agreement, the attachment A, as it's referenced in the ordinance. The ordinance specifically, if passed, authorizes the mayor to execute the agreement. Just myself, and I'm sure I'm probably speaking for the rest of the council, I've been contacted by at least 2 elected officials a variety of community members, some organizations that want specific changes in the agreement. Can you help me understand? And I do read that the ordinance it says that the agreement or a substantially similar form of the agreement is that which needs to be adopted. But how, first of all, if we make changes, how is that determined? And second, what if we make changes that are not substantially consistent
sure.
with what Attachment A is? Now explain the process to me.
Let me talk about the mechanics
okay.
of that, because this was obviously a negotiated agreement and we had to come into agreement in order to present it here to you today. If there are changes to be made in the agreement, what we're going to have to do is go back and reopen some negotiations with Department of Justice, tell them what the issues are that we need to discuss with them, and get their reaction to that. The reference to the substantial similarity in the ordinance language is typical of what we use to allow us to correct very minor portions, you know, page numbers that were not, you know, numbered correctly, paragraph numbers that we missed, very minor changes of language, but we keep it very restricted to that. So if the council has any kind of desire to change the agreement in any kind of real significant way, we're going to have to reopen that. And then what will happen after that is going to depend, I think, on what you folks decide. And I see two possible ways to go about that. One is you have some specific language you want us to take back and have DOJ agree on. And if they agree on it, then I think we're done, because you've approved the agreement as amended. If they don't agree with that language, then I think we're going to have to come back here and present their suggested alteration back to you. I guess one other way that you might do this is if you are not wedded to any particular language but have a concept, you could give authority to the mayor or to somebody to say, go out, accomplish this concept, and then if they accept that concept, you're further authorized to sign the agreement.
And I'm assuming in the negotiations they understood the process we would undergo to approve such an agreement, and they wouldn't be shocked, stunned, and appalled if we came back with something different than what was brought to us.
We did tell them that we would have to take this in front of City Council and get City Council approval, and they understood that.
Could I ask a follow-up question on that? Jim, as I look at the agreement, there are some things which seem to be clearly fundamental, and others where, you know, reasonable people might agree or disagree about the number of people on a committee or the composition of the committee. Do you have a sense of having sat in a room in these negotiations as the difference between fundamental cornerstone points which have to be in the agreement and things that could be negotiated? Without describing them, do you have a sense of that line?
I think I have a general feel for that line. I mean, just to give you some very basic examples, I think the use of force proceedings, those are pretty fundamental. And coming back with pretty significant changes to the use of force, I would think, and I'm just guessing, that those would be difficult to do. There are some other portions of the agreement that probably they'd be more flexible on.
And in addition, again, you were in the room, and you've said at the outset that you've been admonished not to talk about the dynamics of the negotiation. But after this hearing, if it is the will of the council to explore some modifications, and you determine them not to be major modifications, but the kinds of things that we could engage our federal partners with, how much time do you think it would take to have that discussion about their receptivity to our suggestions?
It depends on the, as someone who led the negotiation, I think it depends on the nature of the change, but days, hopefully.
I agree with the mayor, but I'd also say to you that I was very impressed by the team back at Federal DOJ, their willingness to work very, very hard, very, very long hours, and that they were very responsive and moved everything through very quickly.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go to, yes.
Just to clarify for everyone, the mayor, the city attorney, and the chief of police were primarily involved in the negotiations with the Department of Justice, so the rest of the council may have some differences of opinion because we went at the table.
Goes without saying. All right, thank you all. First four.
Just first four, please come on up, are Becky Strauss, Dr. Leroy Haynes, Tom Steenson, and Dan Handelman.
Welcome back. Ms. Strauss, would you like to begin?
I would. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. Becky Strauss here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. You have before you, or you will soon, I think you saw it in advance via email, a copy of my written testimony with a lot more detail, includes comments that we submitted on October 19th to the Bureau and the city and DOJ related to the draft policies on use of force. And both sets of those documents are also posted on our website for reference of others here in the room or watching. I'll take my time today to just highlight a couple elements. We are encouraged that many of our recommendations around the use of force that we submitted on the 19th were accepted by DOJ and the city and the Bureau and have become a part of the settlement agreement, including in particular the necessary standard that was alluded to a little bit by City Attorney Werberl earlier. Even if use of force in a particular case is lawful, it cannot and should not be used if it's not the least amount necessary to achieve that lawful objective. That standard should overlay all use of force decisions that an officer is making, and the agreement mandates as much, and we are supportive of that change. As you consider other amendments today, as was just being discussed, we request also that the agreement be revised to specify when taser use is authorized. Use of the taser should only be permitted when, one, the subject is displaying active aggression as defined by the current taser policy, and two, using that necessary standard that the use of the taser is the least amount of force necessary in that instance. I think most generally, this today and the proceedings from the coming days is your opportunity for true community consensus around the use of force policy and to achieve true lasting change in the way that our public safety system engages with the community. I know that each of you on the council take that moment very seriously, and it's our grave concern that the agreement does not reflect that. Because there's no independent monitor in place with the authority of the court to revive this case if the city and the Bureau are not complying, we fear that there's not enough accountability to ensure that what is mandated will ever be actualized. But it has to be actualized. This needs to happen.
Without interrupting your train of thought.
Of course.
I think I know the answer, but when you say independent monitor, you're talking about someone appointed by the court?
Absolutely, with authority of the court to go back and take this off the, what I believe is being called the kind of the passive docket, the inactive document, and pull it up for a judge to look at.
And what is the precedent in some other jurisdiction that you would want us to look at?
You know, I'd like to point to, I was just checking back with my office to find an example of where that's happened, and I don't have one right now, so I have to get back to you. Yeah, absolutely.
Just since Commissioner Fish asked about that point, because I was going to follow up and ask anyway, why is not the U.S. Attorney's Office that independent monitor?
I think that at the highest level it is, but the benefit of the liaison role here that's being put in place, that would be the perfect person to have authority of the court. They're there reviewing the documents, reporting to counsel, talking to the parties, looking at the use of force reports, engaging with the Bureau. They're here in Portland watching what's happening. And so they're that person is the best person to say substantial compliance is not happening and it's not happening on the timelines that it should. And so it needs to go back to the court.
So just so that I'm clear, I'm not mistaken, because you and I had a discussion about this yesterday, and so I reviewed your comments and I reviewed the agreement. And I'm not mistaken in my interpretation of what I'm looking at here before me, that at any point the U.S. Attorney's Office could intercede and say, we don't believe you're living up to the agreement that we signed, and take independent action by filing a case in U.S. District Court. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You have another 30 seconds if you wanted to finish up your testimony.
I've finished up. I really just want to reiterate that we're optimistic and hopeful that we can do this together. ACLU is committed to helping put this forward and committing to make this agreement happen. So thank you.
And I just want to offer my thanks. I haven't read everybody, so if I don't thank you for your comments, I will read them. But your comments on the use of force and the use of tasers were especially helpful. I want to thank you for them.
Thank you.
Doctor, welcome back.
Thank you very much. To all our distinguished Mayor Sam Adams and illustrious members of the Portland City Council, I am the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes, chairperson of the Bonham Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. The United Agreement before this august body is a milestone in labor and love and commitment and dedication of many people and organizations over several decades of struggle for justice and police reform within the Portland Police Bureau. It is far from a perfect agreement, and many others in our coalition will speak to that. It possesses many strengths, and it also possesses many weaknesses that maintain the status quo. Yet, I believe it moves our city to a new direction towards real accountability of the police officers who use excessive force and unnecessary deadly force. Hopefully, this will be a paradigm shift within the Portland Police Bureau that will transform the makeup of it, the policies, the training, the investigation, and the discipline of officers who violate the policy. It is the hope of many citizens in Portland that this agreement, when it is tweaked and corrected to a degree, as will in turn lead our city and the police bureau towards a true comprehensive community policing plan where the citizens of Portland are not thought of as adversaries but as partners with the police department. I would like to thank this city council for answering the question of its citizens. Who is in charge of the Portland Police Bureau? You have so answered that the Democratic elected representatives of this city are in charge of the Portland Police Bureau, and we thank you for answering that question. We thank Tom Perez of the U.S. Justice Department and Amanda Marsher, the U.S. Attorney and staff, and Chief Reese and his staff. Finally, we have a window of opportunity to make Portland Police Bureau a model for the nation. Let's get to work on it. Amen. Thank you.
And, Doctor, thank you for so in these proceedings, we don't. You can put your thumbs up if you like something, thumbs down if you don't, because we like to try to maintain a sort of a fair field for anyone from any point of view to have make their comments. But, Doctor, I just wanted to underscore my thanks to you. You were there on February 2010 calling for the investigation, that and all your work on these issues over the years. Hi, welcome.
My name is Tom Steenson. I both live in Portland and work here. I've been representing victims and families of victims for over 35 years in litigation against the city of Portland. I think I have a fairly substantial perspective on the issues related to police misconduct and what a good law enforcement agency would look like, in my estimation. I think the agreement is significantly flawed, despite countless hours of input, both individually on my account and as part of a group, and I know of many, many others who have similarly contributed. I see a great deal of what was proposed as what we believed to be best practices, referring to what Mr. Van Dyke earlier said you were looking for in the agreement. And many of the suggestions taken from what we think were good ideas and I think best practices have not been included, and in some cases haven't even been mentioned in a way where I think they've perhaps even been given any consideration. And frankly, I think all of us in the community are at a loss because the way the negotiations have worked, we're not a third party to the agreement. I mean, you talk about it being that way in a sense, but we're not. We were not involved in the negotiations. We don't know whether the Department of Justice said those are bad ideas or those are not best practices and we're not going to advocate for those in the negotiation, or whether the city said we're just not going to do that. So we don't know what happened to what we think was a lot of effort put into a lot of good ideas, and a lot of best practices have been rejected for one reason or another. And I urge you as an overview not to approve this agreement as it stands. I do not think it takes crossing T's and dotting I's. I think it's much more substantial reformation that needs to go into this, and I don't think it's going to be an easy process if you truly want to put in place an agreement that will serve not only the city, but the community. And again, referring to Mr. Van Dyke, this is a contract that you're proposing or that's being proposed that you sign. It's the words of the agreement that are going to control, again, Mr. Van Dyke's words. And I was prepared to go into many of my more specific comments about the flaws, and I could go on for hours, but the ones that I addressed in my written submission yesterday, and I don't have time to do that. But I think that you need to step back and look at this and give much more consideration to the input that you've received, maybe not directly as council members, but that the city and the Department of Justice has received from this community. And at this point, it has not been, in my estimation, fully considered nor accepted.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Handelman?
I'm wondering, since we're discussing 74 pages, if I might have 5 minutes today, Mr. Mayor?
Everyone's going to start with three.
All right. Thank you. Mayor Adams, City Council, and U.S. Department of Justice folks, I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and our group finds the DOJ agreement with the City of Portland doesn't go far enough, and is much like bringing a plastic mallet to tap in a problem nail. While we applaud the potentially useful aspects of the agreement, we find the agreement does not go far enough and or is ambiguous enough for the city to avoid fulfilling the intent of the proposals to alleviate the pattern and practice of Portland Police Bureau excessive use of force. We're concerned that previous communications are not to be considered when interpreting this document. Many recommendations, as you've heard, made by the DOJ are not reflected in the agreement. We ask to see all communications between the city attorney, the PPA, the auditor, the IPR, and the DOJ, hoping they may shed light on why so many common sense community demands are not part of the agreement. This is of great concern because the agreement could last for as long as 5 years with no way for the community to directly intervene, since only the city and the DOJ are parties to the court. We hope this does not mean the DOJ expects the people of Portland to suffer through inadequate use of force training and policies or our Byzantine accountability system for that long. Our major concerns about the agreement include it doesn't call for terminating officers for egregious rights violations and even suggests that some excessive force will not result in discipline. It does not order the city to change provisions of existing collective bargaining contracts, which are inhibiting effective investigations and disciplinary action. It keeps police review board meetings closed to the public, including the person involved in the incident, further frustrating attempts to integrate and make transparent the city's oversight system, and explicitly prohibits appeals to the Citizen Review Committee by people who survive police shootings or survivors of a death in custody victim about the findings regarding officer misconduct. Rather than create a solution for CRC when more investigation is asked for and the Bureau and IPR refuse, the agreement restricts CRC to making one request for more investigation. And it jettisons all mentions of race relations that were in the findings letter, including recommendations to build trust, such as tracking all citizen contacts and creating a policy explaining when it is okay for officers to move from mere conversations to a stop. I do have positive things, but I'm going to skip them and just say we feel our group has a lot to contribute, but our members would not serve on the community board to oversee the agreement because of its flaws. There are too many people who have suffered too long to see yet another chance for real change be squandered by compromise. If these weak changes are locked in place by a court order lasting 5 years, the community will unfairly suffer. We urge you to step back and make more changes before accepting this agreement. And so I will also add that the agreement guts the existing Community Police Relations Committee of the Human Rights Commission, which is creating a program to educate officers on institutional racism. Instead, it's in creating a new oversight body specific to the agreement, and for the second time in just a few years, pitting one set of oppressed Portlanders, that is people with mental health issues, against another, the people of color that the CPRC is trying to help currently. We also echo the concern that the COCL does not have enough power because they can't go before the federal court.
Thank
you for your time.
Appreciate it. Well, the next panel is coming up. I would like to see the racial profiling work of the CPRC continue, and so that's not something that's in this agreement or outside this agreement, so that's my own personal point of view. Next four.
Are Debbie Iona, Mark Kramer, Kyle Busey, and Alan Lazo?
Mark Kramer is not
Sorry,
here.
Thank you. Let's go with Dr. Frankel.
Ms. Iona, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. We submitted a detailed letter, and I will touch on a few items from it today. The complaint system ensures officer accountability and supervision and helps maintain good community relations. Our Citizen Review Committee is an important element of Portland's system. Over the years, the community has recommended that its role be strengthened. Instead, the agreement fails to address the most troublesome issues and creates a degree of uncertainty around others. The reasonable person standard of review used at CRC appeal hearings is overly deferential. An independent expert, a city-appointed committee, and the CRC itself have recommended changing it, and we urge that the agreement incorporate a less deferential standard. At appeal hearings of misconduct cases, CRC has the authority to request that internal affairs conduct more investigation if needed. IA is under no obligation to do so, and city code does not provide clarity on how to resolve the impasse. The letter of agreement gives CRC the right to make one request for additional investigation, but it is not clear about what that means or if IA is required to comply. The confusion and wrangling that occur during appeal hearings in the presence of the complainant and the public over this and the standard of review only serve to erode trust in the system. It is unrealistic to ask the CRC to complete the entire appeal process in 21 days. The CRC members are volunteers, and each appeal hearing requires substantial preparation and considerable deliberation at both the case file review and the full hearing. A more realistic timeline should be established. In the spirit of making the system more accessible for the complainant, they should have the right to attend the police review board hearing related to their case. Survivors or the families of those involved in shootings or deaths in custody cases should have the right to appeal their findings to the CRC. The Community Outreach Advisory Board will oversee the implementation of the agreement and replaces the existing Community Police Relations Committee. CPRC's efforts to address institutional racism within the Bureau and its responsibility to analyze stop data for evidence of bias-based policing need to continue. In its letter of findings, the DOJ pointed to a number of deficiencies in Bureau policies and training. There should be greater involvement by the community in development of those policies. Draft directives could be presented at monthly CRC meetings with an opportunity for public comment. Chief Reese could post draft policy changes online, as he recently did. Or perhaps the COAB is the appropriate venue. Regardless of how it is accomplished, the public must have input in policy development and training practices. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. Good afternoon.
Can you get close to that mic? That seems to be a weak mic.
Or how's that?
That's better. Thank you.
All right. My name is Kyle Busse. I am a Portland resident and chair-elect of the Portland Human Rights Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. As a member of the Portland community and someone who served on the Human Rights Commission for over a year and a half. I commend any effort to effect positive change regarding human and civil rights in the city of Portland, including the efforts being made by the city and the DOJ to address the rights of persons with mental illness, as we're doing here. I believe it's imperative, however, that this agreement is carefully crafted to ensure community engagement and oversight by persons from the mental health community, and that the agreement does not eliminate efforts currently underway to improve police relations with our diverse communities. My initial concern about the agreement as written regards the Community and Police Relations Committee. As you know, the CPRC is an ongoing committee of the Human Rights Commission, which began as an outgrowth of the city's efforts to address racial profiling and, more generally, the police bureau's relationship with communities of color. Many of the challenges that existed in 2007 when the Racial Profiling Committee was created, and in 2009 when the plan to address racial profiling was drafted, continue today. And the HRC is committed to continuing the work of the CPRC with a focus on implementing the plan to address racial profiling and assisting the police bureau with developing its training on institutional racism. That work is jeopardized by the agreement as written. The agreement dissolves the CPRC and, at the very least, interrupts indefinitely the current work of the CPRC related to addressing the challenges I just described. There is nothing in the agreement that charges the COAB with continuing the work of the CPRC or that even refers to issues related to PPB relations with communities of color. Finally, the work of the COAB is going to be so monopolized by the task of overseeing implementation of the agreement that it is highly likely that any efforts beyond that goal will be marginalized or ignored altogether. Ultimately, CPRC's important work related to the PPB's relationship with our communities of color is too important to lose. I am not confident that this work can continue in any effective way if this agreement is approved as written. In addition to those concerns, I am also concerned that the agreement as written contains no provision to ensure that the COAB will include anyone from the mental health community. Moreover, the agreement does not provide for the participation of any non-PPB affiliated use of force experts. And the oversight of an agreement that is almost exclusively focused on use of force policies as they apply to persons suffering from mental illness should contain specific provisions requiring the participation of experts in those fields. We believe these issues can be addressed given more time, and we encourage you to take the time to get this right.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Alan Lazo. I am the outgoing chair of the Human Rights Commission as of yesterday.
Thank you for your service.
I appreciate the opportunity. This is probably the third or fourth time I've been before council. I think every time I've told you that I have been a resident of Portland for 43 years, as of yesterday, my birthday. And as a resident of that length of time, this is a watershed moment in community and police relations. And we need to get it right. We absolutely need to get it right. We strongly support the concept of a robust community engagement system. However, not having been a party to the confidential processes that developed this agreement, we are concerned, as Kyle said, about the progress that the CPRC has made and what would happen to it if it morphed into the COAB. The proposed community engagement process, as the DOJ asserts in its September 13th findings, will require persistent, continuing commitment to inclusion and transparency, as well as effective structures to facilitate continuing dialogue. We believe the changes proposed to the CPRC system is in need of a few more transparent conversations with community stakeholders to ensure that the proposed processes address all of the community's concerns. We just really need more time to make sure we get this right. And I don't think 1 week to do that, if we vote next week, is going to give us that appropriate amount of time. I'll go through a couple of specific elements that I think point out the need for us to continue to look at how this agreement is formed, how the process is formed, how the system is formed. So, for instance, in the current agreement, Section 9, Paragraph 143, the reporting structure has the COAB reporting. Oh, I'm sorry. It currently has the COAB reporting to the COCL and chaired by the COCL. I don't believe that that is an appropriate reporting structure for that. The COCL is an individual, as we've heard this afternoon, who will be selected by this body and reports to this body. If you truly want to have a body that is a community engagement body, it should be led by It should be chaired at a minimum by one of the community members, HRC members, or other, rather than the COCL, who is a person who is essentially a city employee and your employee. Also, in paragraph 145, as Kyle pointed out, small c through f give the charge for the COAB, but there is nothing explicit around its charge to address the tensions around the communities of color that were pointed out in the original findings letter by the DOJ. So that part has been lost in that translation. And in so the other issues, for instance, in paragraph 142, we talk about the length of terms for COB members, COAB members, and I think there needs to be consideration for how long it will take community members and others to come to speed on these very complex systems and processes related to police work. To me, I've been on several boards that are technical in nature. It takes maybe a good year to get up to speed. You're suggesting terms of 2 years here with 1 year reappointments. I would suggest we might need time more like 3 years. So those are the kinds of conversations we need to have as a community to get this right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mayor, I have a question for the Human Rights Commissioners. When is your next meeting?
Next Wednesday.
So you haven't, as a body, had a chance to look at this proposal
since
it just came out last Friday?
Not collectively, no.
And do you know which of the members, how many of the members of the Community and Police Relations Committee are willing to serve in the role that has been identified for them in this document?
Well, I wouldn't want to speak for them, but I certainly think that it was a surprise to them to learn that they were being uprooted from their current work on the CPRC and placed into a position that they knew nothing about previous to last Thursday.
So do you think, given another week, you'll be meeting on Wednesday and you might have a proposal for us that the Human Rights Commission would be willing to embrace with regards to the makeup of the committee?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Doctor, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Thank you, Commissioner Leonard, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish, for giving all of us the opportunity to speak. My name is Dr. Herman Frankel. I lived and worked together with my wife Ruth in Portland since 1965. You'll remember I was one of the people who spoke at Jefferson High School at the Portland City Council meeting when the Human Rights Commission was established. In fact, initially, to your consternation, some of you, but perhaps to your delight afterwards, it was I who led the audience in singing, "For all human beings." You might remember that. I'm here today to call upon you to address serious concerns regarding the proposed agreement between the City of Portland and the U.S. Department of Justice. I share the worry voiced by Portland Cop Watch members and board and by others who've testified today that the proposed agreement that's designed to change the way Portland Police Bureau provides service to the community would, at the same time that it implements some welcome changes, leave some important issues resolved. In the print testimony that you have in your hands and that I understand will be posted on the city's website, there are 15 areas of profound concern. One of them, as has been noted, is the fact that the proposed agreement would gut the existing Community Police Relations Committee of the Human Rights Commission, which is currently creating a program to educate officers on institutional racism, and the agreement would instead create an oversight body specific to the agreement, devoid of any mission to deal with race issues. This worries me profoundly. And I'm worried as well by about the 14 other concerns that are listed in the print testimony that I've submitted to you. I fervently call upon the members of my city council to address thoughtfully the concerns that have been raised to you today and prior to today regarding the proposed agreement before you move forward to approve the proposed agreement. Thank you again for the chance to testify.
Thank you all for your testimony. All right, the next four
are Michael Mio, Fred Bryant, Dr. T. Allen Bethel, and Sylvia Zingaser.
Who is the first person?
Michael Mio, M-E-O, sorry.
Welcome back to the City Council. Would you like to begin?
14.
What's that, Carla? Oh, 14 more? Okay. Hi, welcome.
Hello, Mayor Adams, and this is my second appearance before the City Council, Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Fritz, Fish. I am Michael Mayo, and I am a secretary of the Cascadia chapter of the Pacific Green Party. I am also a member of Cop Watch, but I am here as a citizen, just a not representing either of those two bodies. I'd like to speak in as concise a manner as I can. Short sentences, simple thoughts. I don't have at my fingertips details and the many, many pages and paragraphs of the agreement. I will say that from my perspective, the problem is that of police accountability. And we are sitting here because there has been a lack of police accountability in our city. There are a lot of distractions that pull us away from this major point of a lack of police accountability over decades in our city. Among the distractions have, from my perspective, again, have to do with what is the color of the police officer's skin or the color of the person who has been brutalized. And I consider those distractions, and I would like to point out education is not the same thing as accountability. We had a Department of Justice investigation, and that was in one way a very good thing, because this Department of Justice investigation concluded that there has been a pattern of brutality within our police. And that which we community members have been saying for years, decades, is now given the approval, the assertion of the federal government. However, that same investigation has produced a failure. It is a failure, again, of keeping the eye on the ball because we're talking about a lack of police accountability. It's not just Portland alone that is looking at this, however. The problem is large. Our police chief told us that we're having fewer people locked up. We're having a lower crime rate. Yet the United States is more militarized on many levels as a result of many other things. We lock up something like 3.5 out of every 10 people in the world. What we want is a truly independent police review board, and this agreement doesn't give it. We also want the mayor and the city council to do what it has done with the Flash Hour case and fire police officers who kill citizens.
Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome.
Hi. Hello to the commission and Mayor Adams. Good to see you again. My name is Fred Bryant, father of Keaton Otis. Because anyone else who this case was investigated and assigned findings other than sustained, has a right to appeal those findings to the CRC. Myself feel denied of my request for an appeal is fundamentally unfair. And I want to secure the right for myself and anyone else who has lost a loved one, or for that matter, survived a police shooting, to appeal findings that almost exclusively clears all wrongful doing. And I've listened to everything that's been said today. And this is a time for us to come together. You know, it's like, I have no problem with wrong and right. If you're wrong, you're wrong. I work in the community. I've been here 52 years. Okay. I have 11 grandchildren. This is not about what's going to happen today. It's about what's going to happen in 20 years. What are we going to have in 20 years for our grandchildren, for our kids and their kids? What are we leaving them? You know what I'm saying? Because we're going to be gone. I work in the community with mental health, addiction. Mayor Adams has been to our new building. He sees the work we've done over decades to help people in the community get back in life. Everybody needs the opportunity to be able to better themselves. And that's what we do. Mr. Salzman, you know, was part of us getting this building over on MLK. Now, I know for a fact that if you believe that we're doing a good job, and you must have been, because that building was $12 million. I didn't have it in my pocket, okay? But it's there, and we help the community. I, myself, have relationships with the Portland Police Bureau. I have friends that I talk to, officers at North Precinct, Northeast Precinct, chiefs. You know, they have a meeting, a monthly meeting at our building. So this is not about, you know, who's wrong or right. It's about, let's try to get it together. Okay. Bottom line, you know, we're all these big words, I don't get them. I like to keep it real simple. If it's wrong, fix it. Bottom line, let's not twist it all up, try to make it better for one person than another person, and be like crabs in a barrel. See, that's what I tell my people that come in that want help getting back. You want to know how to stay out of jail? Stop doing what you're doing. Because if you do what you do, you're going to jail. Bottom line, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being here. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Zingaser, NAMI Multnomah advocate. And I'd like to respond for NAMI families, so I have a letter I'd like to read. NAMI family members' statement. As we have done previously, NAMI family members advocate for Portland volunteer CIT police officers to use the Memphis, Tennessee model. NAMI family members want to know these officers as well as interact with them. NAMI family members want family members and peers to be a part of the training process so the volunteer officers hear directly from family members and peers face to face. It is important for officers to get to know the family member's ill relative when they are not in crisis. We believe Portland Police needs an A-team, a first-tier response team of volunteer officers who receive extended CIT, and that they become the experts in dealing with mental health crisis on the street. We believe all officers should be trained in CIT because an A-team, first-tier team, may not be available at all times. Officers are like emergency room doctors and nurses. They have to take things as they come in and are held accountable for their on-the-spot decisions. In my opinion, any officer who doesn't want to respond to a mental health crisis call or a family beef is in the wrong job. A lot of bad guys have mental illnesses too, and it's difficult to separate that out in the heat of a call. My son stated recently, because of his own experience during one of his suicide attempts several years ago, that police officers need to get over treating people like they are guilty until proven innocent. The law says innocent until proven guilty. It happens to be my son's birthday, by the way. He's 48. In closing, I do want to commend the officers who assisted my son's recent suicide attempt. My husband, William Summerlight, and I were on the scene. The officer's approach was CIT perfect, and for that we are very grateful. The officers did not know my involvement with NAMI or that I was a member of the CIT Advisory Board. Thank you, Mayor Adams and Commissioners.
Well, thank you. I know you worked with Commissioner Fritz through all the Safer PDX and that. Her efforts with yours stood us well in the part of this agreement that has the fast-tracking of the healthcare reforms, the CCO reforms. So thank you for your involvement.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Doctor, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and to all of our commissioners. Good to see you again. First of all, I want to thank you for your work in this matter, working with the Department of Justice and your due diligence in working towards this agreement. This is a moment that we may never have again, but it is a great moment at this time that we have to take a giant step towards making our community more livable and towards community policing. Just a few fundamental questions that I have of thought. You've heard many of the suggestions and recommendations, and we do echo our support and sentiment with those. But the committee's composition that we are proposing in this agreement is to take one committee that at best has not been effective and suggest now that that committee can do the job now. That it is best to continue with the current leadership, again, if that could be done and it could do it, then why has it not been done? And why has it brought us to the place where we are, where we had to have a DOJ investigation to say what we've been saying over and over and over again? Transparency builds trust. And in this case, trust has been further eroded by the process undertaken that seems to only reinforce things already in place, leaving this community in a situation to endure five more years of unclarity and being subject to interpretation based on individuals. This agreement needs to be relooked at, renegotiated, and it needs to come back with teeth. It needs to come back with the grip of authority to hold accountable the police bureau. I urge you all to take a look and read through the document again. DOJ said community involvement. Where was the community when the doors were closed? Where was the community again when we were invited to be a part of the police bureau's negotiation for a contract that they take it behind closed doors and then the agreement comes out? We're tired of closed doors and things being jammed down our throats. We want you, our elected officials, to stand up, say to the city attorney, say to the chief of police, Mr. Commissioner, what you have done thus far is not acceptable. It is not good for our community, and we want to strengthen what is going to be so that in our future we will have a better community, better relationships with our police bureau, and we all can get together. If we would have included community from the beginning, perhaps those of us who are here saying redo would be here saying thumbs up and good job. Don't forget us, even at this time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doctor. Because we've been going on now for however many hours, we're going to take a 8-minute break. So we'll see you back here at 4:04.
Can I get your name?
The middle name is A-L-L-E-N.
Carla, can you please call? How many do we have? How many folks do we have left to testify? 13? All right. So can you call the next four?
Next four are Joanne Hardesty, Danita Fry, Angela Kimball, and Ann Brayfield.
Welcome back, Ms. Hardesty.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
We got to turn on your mic first.
Oops, hold on.
Oh, do I need a mic?
Most days, no. But most days, we want the public television to hear you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. For the record, I'm Joanne Hardesty, and I live and work in Portland. And I want to start my testimony, Mayor, by correcting a statement you made in your opening remarks. The statement that you made that the DOJ didn't find racism within the Portland Police Bureau is an inaccurate statement. In fact, the investigation says that that was not part of their investigation. So it's not that they didn't find it. They didn't look for it. I also wanted to reiterate some words that I heard from the attorney that said the words of the agreement are the only things that will count in holding this, holding the Portland police accountable. And I think that that's very important. I've submitted to all of you a 6-page letter that I will not read here, but I will highlight for you some of my concerns. And I know, Mayor, you and your staff worked very hard on this agreement, and I respect the work that you've done. My major concern is the community oversight of this process. As the DOJ stated, the community participation and oversight of this agreement will be important to its success. It also laid out that the body will also provide the community with information on this agreement, implementation, and receiving comments and concern. The proposal to put together this community outreach and advisory board, I disagree with the arrangement that's been proposed. And I disagree with it because I want to be honest with you. Ever since the DOJ has come to town, and even before they came, we have never heard from the Portland police that they have done anything wrong. So it's really hard to go into mandated reform efforts if you've never done anything wrong. And so my concern is that if we take advisory bodies that already have been vetted by the police and the city council, and they have been found to be acceptable to the police, they're acceptable to the police because they don't raise the hard questions. They don't challenge them. They don't hold them accountable for the information that they provide. What we need is a process whereby the community would get to elect their own leadership for this oversight council, and we need to take out the word advisory. They're not advisory. Their job is to make sure that the mandated changes happen, and they need to be able to do that without the perception that they're providing advice to the police chief. We have a fundamental responsibility, especially for the commissioners that will come back next year, because you are investing $26 million in basically a full employment program for Portland police officers. $26 million is what this contract will cost us, both short-term and long-term, and it is not sufficiently, it does not have a sufficient oversight process in it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hardesty. Appreciate it. And appreciated your letter, and we will... And everyone who submitted longer testimony, we will definitely all be reading those and getting back to you. Appreciate it. Hi, welcome, Commissioner.
Dongu Yetchibayaku. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, City Council. My name is Donita Fry, and I'm a member of the Human Rights Commission, and I have been for the past 4 years. I was appointed by the Human Rights Commission last month to chair the work of the Community Police Relations Committee. I've been participating in that work for more than 3 years now. The work that we've been doing and the relationships that have resulted at the CPRC are authentic, respectful, and productive. The relationships between the Human Rights Commission, the police, and the community are authentic. I believe that the working model that has been created is effective because of the commitment from the command staff at Portland Police Bureau, also because of the learning opportunities that have been created over the past 3 years. We are able to come with informed perspectives that are woven into our decisions and our actions that are coming out of the work of the CPRC. And I've heard Commander Krebs, Assistant Chief O'Day, and Chief Reese comment many times on the ability and the uniqueness of the relationships that are produced here. For this committee not to be a yes group, we don't just affirm what the police are doing. We ask those difficult questions and we push back. And really, I've seen shift in the culture that of not only the way this committee works together, but the way the police officers coming to the work, participate and their community. Not only the community who serve on the committee, but the community who are here in the rooms today that come to these meetings and gain a deeper understanding. I think there's a perception in the community about what the police, how the police operate and what the police are doing. And then there's a reality of